Okay, good evening, everyone. There is no video of the class tonight, just audio. Parshas Beshalach, Tav Shin Ayin Tes. Okay, so we're going to start on page 370, Perek Yudalid, Pasuk Tes Vav. So the Jewish people find themselves trapped in between the Egyptians and the Yam Suf and the Red Sea. Can you see? And Vayimer Hashem El Moshe, Hashem says to Moshe, Matitzak Eloi, why are you crying out to me? Dabrel b'nei Yisrael v'yiso, speak to the Jewish people, they should travel. Va'ata harem esmatcha, and you shall. Okay, va'ata harem esmatcha, and you harem. So, translate it simply. Harem means lift your staff, and spread out your hands over the sea, and split it. And the Jewish people shall enter into the sea onto dry land. So, if I were to ask you, when Moshe split the Red Sea, when he split the sea, did he do it with his stick? Well, based on this, it sounds like that, right? Lift up your staff and spread out your hand and split it. Sounds like Hashem is telling Moshe that the motion of moving his hand, whatever that motion moving his hand is, he's supposed to have this stick in his hand. Now, let's turn to the next page and let's look on page 372. Look at Pasuk Chav Aleph. Got it? Vayet Moshe es yadoi al hayam. And Moshe spread out his hand over the sea. No mention of the staff. So, with this, we enter into an interesting difference of opinion. Rabbeinu Bechaya says, based on what we just said, that although it says Horeim es matcha, it cannot mean that Moshe was supposed to lift the staff over the sea. That was how he was supposed to split the sea. Because as we just read, the other pasuk just says he spread out his hand. And therefore, so what did he do at the end? Was it with the stick, without the stick? Says Rebbeinu Bechaya, as the second pasuk says, he stretched out his hand over the sea and the sea split. That means Moshe did not use the stick. He just spread his hand. So what does it mean, Horeim es matcha? The answer is, harem here does not mean lift up. Rather, in this context, the word harem, which we had on Pasuk Tes Zayin, when Hashem first told Moshe what to do, and it says, harem es matcha, harem your staff. Harem in this context does not mean lift up, but it actually means remove, put it aside. How do you know that?
No, I just guessed it.
So let me show you where the word harem is used that way. For that, we got to turn a whole bunch to Parshas Korach. Okay. Now, actually, I thought it was here. One second, I thought it was here. Okay, I take it back. I don't know where it is. All right, but again, in this context, the Rebbeinu Bechaya says Heromu means to basically remove the stick. Now, why did he have to be told to remove the stick? Why was that so important? Why do you have to tell him remove the stick? Just say, take your hand and spread it over. Why mention remove the stick? So says Rebbeinu Bechaya, because there's a very interesting medrash. the Jewish people, there were people amongst the Jewish people, let's put it this way, the way the Rabbeinu Bachaya says it is, Lefi Shohayu Meha'am Mechusrei Emunah. There were those amongst the people that did not believe. And what did they say? The Medrash says, Ein Koyach Biyad Moshe L'Saistavar El B'mata. Moshe has no power to do anything unless he uses a stick. Based on what? By Hikas Hayar, with it he hit the Nile River. By Hevi Kol Amakis, with it he went down and brought all the plagues. All the plagues came through his staff. Okay, so therefore there were those amongst the Jewish people saying that Moshe's power is only in the staff. The cave and Shemo Liyam, Mitzrim Yisraelim Yisrael Imdim. Now they came to a point where the Egyptian, the Jews, were standing by the sea. Omer LaHaKadosh Baruch Hu Harei Mismatcha. And that Hashem says, remove your staff, get rid of it. That they shouldn't say, if not for the staff, he wouldn't be able to split the sea. So there's a necessity to say Harei Mismatcha, because essentially the staff should be involved. The same way it was involved in the 10 plagues, it should be involved here. But at this point, for some reason, Hashem wanted to finally end that belief of people that Moshe's power is only in the staff. It was at this point where they had the Egyptians and the Jews, you know, basically this was the final contest. It was here that Hashem wanted everybody to see it's not about Moshe's staff, it's about the power that Hashem invests in Moshe as the prophet. And on that he now brings it down, that says the Rebbe Bachaya, he explains something else. If you take a look on page 374, which is after the splitting of the Red Sea, and after the sea has closed upon the Egyptians and have been drowned, on page 374, Pasuk Lamed Aleph, verse 31, three lines from the bottom, the Pasuk reads, Vayar Yisrael Sada Gedoy Lashorasa Hashem Mitzrayim. Israel saw the great hand that God performed in Egypt. Vayar Mes Hashem, the nation feared God. Vayaminu Ba'Hashem V'Moshe Avdoy, and they believed in God and Moshe his servant. Now the question is, what do you mean they believed in a God and Moshe his servant? We know that back in Parsha Shmos, when Moshe first appears on the scene and he tells the Jewish people that Hashem has remembered them, that they're going to be redeemed, it says, Vayamino, the people believed. So what does it mean now? And they believed in Hashem and Moshe, his servant. It says Rabbeinu Bachaya, because now that Moshe Rabbeinu performed the miracle without the staff, so originally they believed. Then they got caught up in the staff, that there's something powerful about the staff. Now that Moshe Rabbeinu split the Red Sea without the staff, that got them back into believing that it's not about the staff, but it's about Moshe and the power that Hashem invests in Moshe. So that was the Vayaminu. That's what they came back to. They had Emunah. They kind of slipped away from it, kind of falling prey to the staff, believing in the staff. And now, after Moshe split the Red Sea without the staff, they're back to where they should be, which is believing in Hashem and in Moshe, his servant.
So the possibility was that they believed in the stick outside of Hashem.
It seems that way according to this, that it's some kind of like a witchcraft or something.
Okay.
However, it is important to point out that the Targum Yonis Ben Uziel, the Aramaic translation and commentary to the Torah of Yonis Ben Uziel, who was the Tana of the Mishnah, he says like this on the second pasuk, and it says Moshe stretched out his hand. So on that, the Targum Yonis writes, Va'achad Moshe Yasidei, Moshe stretched out his hand, Al Yama over the sea, stretched out his hand, Al Yama over the sea, Bechutra Rabba V'Yakira, with the great and precious stick, the Isbri Men Sheruya, that was created way back from the beginning, Ubechakek Amafarish Ma Rabba V'Yakira, and on it is engraved the special holy, great and holy name of Hashem. What else is engraved on that stick, on that staff? Ve'isarte asvasa dimacha yas mitzroi. The 10 plagues are engraved on it. Utlas abas alma, the three fathers, Avraham, Yitzchak, and Yaakov. The shis imhasa, and the six mothers. Isn't that interesting? The six mothers? Mm-hmm. We always have to tell we have four mothers. Right. And in this context, it's called six. In this context, Bilhah and Zilpah are counted as two of the mothers. That's an aside, but very interesting. Utresa shiftei de Yaakov, and the 13 tribes of Yaakov. So that would seem to imply, right, that Moshe was using the stick. Even though it doesn't mention the stick, but Moshe was using the stick.
But he will then have to explain why it isn't mentioned in the text.
Good. Question. Right. But at the same time, the Yonis Targum Yonisim seems to be saying that he did use the stick.
Right.
So we have a difference of opinion exactly when Moshe stretched out his hand over the Red Sea to split it. Was it with the stick in hand? Was it without the stick in hand? Okay. Now, let's go back. Let's go after the Torah records the Shiras Hayam, the singing of the song of the Red Sea. This is at the end, page 380, which is Parak Tesvav, chapter 15, Pasuk Ketes, verse 19. It reads, Kibasus Pari Berech Mefrasha Bayam, for the horse of Parah and his chariot and his horsemen entered the sea, Vayashav Hashem Aleihem Esmei Hayam, and God brought the waters of the sea upon them, and the Jewish people went on dry land in the midst of the sea. Now, there's an interesting question whether this last verse is actually part of the song or not. You know, if you notice the way it's written on the Hebrew side, which is the way they have it written in a Chumash, it's written differently. It's written the same way the rest of the song is written. However, there are many commentaries that learn it's not part of the song, in essence. Now, what's written after that? Right after that, we read, Vatikach Miriam HaNaviah, Achais Aaron HaSatayf B'yada, Miriam the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, took the drum in her hand, Vatayitzenu Chal Anoshim Achareha, and all the women went out after her, Besupim Uvimachaylais, with drums and with dances, Vatan Lehem Rivka, and Rivka spoke up to them, Shiru LaHashem Ki Ga'i Ga'a, sing to Hashem, for He is exalted above all exalted, sus v'reichvayim v'ayam, horse and chariot, he cast into the sea. So Miriam and the women also sang a song, the only thing it seems, again, according to the basic, simple interpretation, that this shiru l'Hashem kigai ga'a is very similar to the very first part of this of the shira, that it says Moshe and the Jew and the men saying, which is Ashir Hashem Ki Gai Gaasus Berechvei Ramavayam. It seems that Miriam and the women only sang that verse, but at the end, yeah.
A question: why they call her sister of Aaron?
We'll get to that. Okay. We'll get to that. But what we have here is Miriam leading the women out to seemingly do their own singing at the Red Sea. So there is a commentary called Mar B'Shemesh that asks a number of very interesting questions here. First of all, going back to Pasuk Kites, where it says, Kivas Vis Parai, for Parai's chariot came, Hashem brought the waters upon them, the Jewish people walked in dry land. We know this all. We know it. Why is it being repeated? It would seem that this could be left out, and all we need to do is finish the song with Hashem Yimloich Lo'ilam Vod, right? Which is the end of Moshe B'nai Yisrael. And then the next thing is Miriam and the women. They also saying, what do we need to repeat something that seemingly we know and interject it into the middle of the two songs? That's one question. The second question he asks is that should we really think that when it says Moshe B'nai Yisrael sang, so what did the women do? They stayed quiet? The Mar B'Shemesh assumes, why should we say they kept quiet? There's following the Medrash. The Medrash says that even babies in the wombs of their mother were singing Shira, which means it was such a experience that you just had to break out in song. Every living thing, every Jew broke out in song, including a baby in its mother's stomach. So all the more so, we should say the women did so. So why are they doing their own thing now? If seemingly we should assume that they sang together with everybody else when the miracle was happening, why did they do a separate one? Okay, and right. And the next question, the third question he asks is like this. Now for this we got to go back a little, before the Shiras Hayam, and turn back again to page 374. Look at Perek Yudalit, chapter 14, Pasuk Lamed, verse 30. Vayesh Hashem Emuhu Esther Man Mitzrayim. And God saved on that day Israel from the hands of Egypt. Vayayishas Mitzrayim. Israel saw Egypt, Meis Asvas Hayam, dead on the shore of the sea. So Rashi comments that the reason why the Jewish people saw that the Egyptians Right, that Israel saw the Egyptians dead on the seashore. Rashi comments, Shapolten ayam al svasai. They were drowned in the water. But it says the Jewish people saw Mitzrayim dead. That implies that they actually saw them dead. Not that they left them in the water or they assumed that they drowned, but rather they actually saw them dead. Says Rashi, quoting a Medrash, that the sea spit them out. Right, and they were lying on the shore. Why was it important to do that? Because they shall yomer Yisrael, so the Jewish people shouldn't say, "Kashem shano alim mitzadzeh." The same way we came up on one side, "Kachem alim mitzad acharach rimenu," going to come up from a different side, further away. "V'yir difu acharein and don't chase after us." Meaning, the Jewish people were concerned, after all is said and done, that the same week we came out of this, the Egyptians are going to come out. We don't see them, but maybe they're going to come out at a different end. And therefore, in order to calm them down, to comfort them, Hashem showed them they're gone. Don't have to worry about them.
Fascinating.
Okay? So, and then it says, the Jewish people saw the great hand of Hashem, and the Jewish people sang. But here there is a specific detail mentioned of seeing the Egyptians dead. Now let's get back to our pasuk on page 380. Pasuk Yates. Kivasus parat berech befrashe bayam. Paros, chariots, and horsemen entered the sea. Vayoshev Hashem aleihem esmei hayam. Hashem brought the waters upon them. Uvnei Yisrael halchu b'yam b'shem b'sei hayam. And the Jewish people walked on dry land in the midst of the sea. All these three things, right? They entered the water came on them, the Jewish people walked in it like it was dry land. All those were mentioned before, correct? What's missing? No mention of seeing them dead on the shore. No mention of that. Meaning, the pasuk is saying that we just sang, we just had a song here, Kivasus Pare, because of what happened.
So maybe women have better immunity.
Okay. But let's just get the question clear. Kivasus Pare is explaining why we just had the song. Well, then, the same way you said before you had the song, when they saw the Egyptians dead, why isn't that being mentioned here also? So the Ma'ar v'Shemesh, the approach that he has here to explain is that there was a difference between the men and the women. The men actually only sang their song once they saw the dead bodies on the shore. The women, on the other hand, nope. They didn't have to see that. They actually sang before the men sang. They didn't need to see the Egyptians actually dead there on the shore. They saw the water come on the Egyptians. They saw how the Jewish people went through. That was enough for them to go ahead and sing. So they sang before the men actually sang. Now, the Ma'ar v'Shemesh himself, in explaining this difference, has his approach. The Chasam Sefer explains it in the following way. And he explains with, if you take a look, Rashi points out, on Pasuk Chaf, it says, Mir, the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, took the drum in her hand. All the women went after her with drums and dances. So Rashi comments, it's the bottom Rashi on the right column on page 380, on the words, with drums and with dances. Rashi comments, the righteous women of the generation were sure that God's going to do miracles for them. And then they took out drums from Egypt. Rashi is explaining, they took out drums. Why did they take out drums for? They expecting a party? The answer is, yeah, the righteous women were expecting a party. They're expecting a celebration. They were expecting, they knew that there was, Hashem was going to do miracles for them, and there's going to be a reason to celebrate. So says the Chasam Sefer, you see from Rashi, the tremendous level of trust that the righteous women had in Hashem's salvation of the Jewish people. Therefore, they saw the miracle. The water's coming down the Egyptians, the Jewish people are walking through. They don't need to see anything more. It was the men, on the other hand, not on the same level as the women, when it came to having their trust in Hashem, that they needed one more step. They needed more assurance. Deep down, they needed more assurance to go ahead and be able to really now feel the joy of the salvation and sing. And with this, the Chasam Sefer explains, going back to page 374, which is the beginning of the Shira, 374, Perek Tesvav Pasuk Aleph. It says, Az Yashem Moshe v'nei Yisrael. Right? The Pasuk says the Jewish people saw the great hand that Hashem did against Egypt. The nation feared God. They believed in God and Moshe his servant. Az Yashem Moshe v'nei Yisrael. Then Moshe and the Jewish people sang. What's the then? They saw, they sang. What do you have to say? Then they sang. So says the Chassam Sefer, we can suggest that the then is going back on where it says, it's going back not just where it says the Jewish people saw. It's going back where it says the Jewish people saw the Egyptians dead. Then, and only then, they sang. That's the uz. The uz yasher is then. Then, once the Jewish people saw the Egyptians dead, and now they could see the great hand and believe in everything, then they sang. But the then was pointing out, only then could they sing. They could only sing then, after they saw the Egyptians dead. There were others who weren't that way. They didn't need that to sing. Those were the women. Now, Rav Shimon Schwab Zatzal, in his Sefer on Chumash Mayim Beis HaShoeva, which I'm going to make a public thank you now to the members of the Shir who gave me a very generous Hanukkah present. And I actually, one of the things that I bought with that generous Hanukkah present was this Sefer from Rav Schwab on Chumash that I always wanted. So thank you very much. So he points out, he makes a very interesting point. When he says this explanation also about the women, you know, doing it before the men. But he says, and I think it's a very good point, that, all right, based on what I just said, so, all right, the women did it before the men. When did they do it? Okay, so they got out of the water. They did it right away. The men had to wait to see for the water to spit it out and to see, right? The Rav Schwab says that it makes sense to say that the women, if they did it separately, they did it inside the water. Because what does it say? It says that when the Paros horsemen entered the sea and Hashem brought the water on them, the Jewish people walked through like on dry land, Miriam sang. That would mean, meaning so if we put it together, which we should, because it's supposed to follow that also, Vatikach Miriam is supposed to follow also, because Paro's armies went into the water and the water came back on them and the Jewish people walked on dry land. And then, and because of that, Miriam led the women in song. So that description of the water coming down and the Jewish people being in the sea, that's happening in the sea. Well, that's not after the sea. That's happening in the sea.
In the sea, but without water.
No. You've got water falling already on the Egyptians behind, according to the way Rashi brings down, I believe, here in the Parsha, or Medrash, that you know, you've got the Jewish people are going through the water, the Egyptians are following behind. There is a point where the water is beginning to come down on Paro, and the Jewish people are still walking through the sea. So it works very good in the words where it says, Paro's horsemen came in, and Hashem brought the water on them. The Jewish people were walking in the sea. Miriam takes the drum. She's taking the drum at that point. She's taking the drum when you have the water coming down on the Egyptians and the Jewish people walking on dry land, which we know took place simultaneously, and the women are singing already. They're not even all out there singing. That's how he learns. That's how he learns. But the point to answer all these questions, which are very strong questions, is to say that the women, they were ready to sing Shira before the men were. Because they were on a higher level of trust in Hashem. Okay. The next thing I'd like to discuss So let's start talking about the question that you asked. The Pasuk reads, Pasuk Chaf, again, page 380, Perek Tesvav, Pasuk Chaf. Verse 20, Vatekach Miriam HaNeviah Achais Aaron HaSatoif Biyada. Miriam the prophetess the sister of Aaron, took a drum in her hand. So the question that all the commentaries ask is, she's only Aaron's sister, not Moshe's sister? So Rashi tells us the following. Rashi tells us, again, this is Rashi in the right column, 2, 4, 5 lines from the bottom, HaNeviah, prophetess, Heichen Nisnaba, when or where, when did she prophesy? Kishahaisa achis Aaron, when she was a sister of Aaron. Kaidim shenoilad Moshe, before Moshe was born. Omra, she said, Asida imi shetayled bein, my mother is going to give birth to a son that's going to save the Jewish people.
Well, that was the first time. I assume she did more.
Maybe yeah, maybe not.
Interesting.
But the point is, you know, from Rashi, the point would be at least that, you know, I guess you could learn in Rashi that it means when she began. Right. But the point is, here is where the, for some reason, here is where the Torah is pointing that out. Mm-hmm. Here is where the Torah is pointing out Miriam being a prophetess. It's pointing out she was a prophetess as a sister of Aaron. And not when she was a sister of Moshe, because her prophecy came before Moshe was born. It was a prophecy about Moshe's birth. And so for whatever reason, this has to be alluded to. Torah decides to allude that here, but this is where it's happening. She's called a prophetess, the sister of Aaron, to bring out that she became a prophetess, or she did prophesy as, or where, Rashi says, where did she prophesy? As a sister of Aaron. Okay, which probably does sound more like, just offhand, sounds like more like Rashi's, would seem to be working with, she prophesied once and that was it. That's Rashi's explanation. Now, let's just finish up the Rashi, where Rashi says, "Besupavim chaylis," and we read this before, "Muftachas hayut," where it says they went out with the drums and with the dances. "Muftachas hayut zidkaniyah shebedar," the righteous women of that generation were assured. "Shekadosh Baruch Hu yislam nisa," HaKadosh Baruch Hu did miracles for them. "Vatziyus supim mitzrayim," therefore they took out drums from Egypt. So the fact that Rashi's pointing out, you know, it says they went out with drums, seems to be bothering Rashi. You know, what did they go out with drums for? The answer is because they knew Hashem would do miracles, and therefore they took out the drums because they knew it would be a point where they'd be singing in praise to Hashem using the drums. Maybe they just own drums.
Maybe they just worked
on. Meaning, why do we have to say that, you know, why they brought out the drums? Because they knew for sure that Hashem is going to do miracles. Maybe they owned a set of drums. People own instruments, right? People own instruments. So they brought out the instruments, and therefore they had the instruments. Why do we have to say that the reason they had drums was because they were sure there would be a reason to celebrate a miracle? They brought out drums because they had drums. So maybe one answer is, it says, we're talking, it's, again, it says, I mean, if the assumption is that all the women did this, right? So all the women had drums? All of them had it? And the answer is, yeah, you know why all of them had it? Because they were all sure a miracle would happen. Maybe we can come from a different angle. Maybe as slaves, they didn't own instruments. I mean, they had their own lives, they had their own homes and everything, but maybe instruments they didn't have as slaves. And therefore, if they came out with drums, it means they went through the effort of getting drums. Why? You don't own a drum, so you don't have a drum. Why go out and put in the effort to get a drum? The answer is, again, says Rashi, because they were sure that there'd be a reason to celebrate.
But they were chased by the, you know, Pharaoh's army, so where in the world they would get drums?
They took it out with them before they left.
So they all owned drums, or they bought them, or they would.
So that's the thing. Rashi seems to be telling us, like, why do they have these drums, right? So Rashi says they took them out from Egypt because they were sure they could have a miracle. So my question is, so maybe they took them out of Egypt because they had them in Egypt.
Which is unlikely at all.
So either maybe it's unlikely to say that all of them had already.
Plus, it doesn't seem to be the most precious possession that you take.
Who says you gotta take precious possessions? I mean, is there any? Let's put it this way. So what you're saying is that we know that they left loaded with gold,
right?
Right, and they had to have some possessions of their own,
right?
Right? So you'd assume what they only of their own possessions, they only took important stuff because they had to take so much gold and silver that there must be things left behind.
Right.
So then leave behind the drums.
Right.
Okay, maybe that's another explanation. The explanation is that the assumption should be that although, again, they took plenty of gold and silver, So you could argue, well, once you're taking all of that, take everything else. Maybe not. Maybe not. Maybe the answer is that because they're taking all the gold and silver, they should have left non-essentials behind. So what are you taking drums for? The answer is because they do be miracles. Okay, perhaps that's also an approach. Perhaps. Okay. Okay. The Ramban, when the Ramban explains, wants to answer the question, why did it say Achis Aaron, the sister of Aaron? So the Ramban says, Hanochen ve'enai, what I feel is, kibipnei shehuzkeru b'shira Moshe u'miriam, lehuzkeru Aaron, ratzakos of laskira. You know why it says the sister of Aaron? Because it's such a big event of the splitting of the Red Sea. Moshe is mentioned. Miriam is mentioned. Aaron needs to be mentioned also. It's an honor. Aaron deserves the honor of being mentioned here also. V'omar achais Aaron derech kavadloi, and by saying that she is the sister of Aaron, that's a show of honor to him. Shehu achi agadol v'achais anavi misyacheses elav. She gamhu navi v'kadosh Hashem. He is the older brother, and his sister, the prophetess, is identified with him, in meaning if the prophetess is identified with him, then that means he's probably a prophet also. Because if she would be a prophet and he wouldn't be, then she would be greater in that sense and not be identified by him. But she's identified by him as the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, because he's also a prophet. He's also a great person. But the point to mention it all is because the Pasuk wants to give mention to Aaron also.
Well, but if they said Aaron and Moshe, that still would have mentioned Aaron.
Yeah, but we don't need to mention Moshe because we're not just trying to identify her. Just identify her. We're identifying her because we're trying to give Aaron covet. That's the way the Ramban is saying. Aaron is a very big player, and therefore he needs to be mentioned also.
And is this the only place that alludes to him being a prophet?
Who?
Aaron.
In the Chumash?
Yeah.
Well, we know it's... I mean, there are times where it says Hashem spoke to Moshe and to Aaron.
Well, that means...
But the thing is, that may mean that Hashem said to Moshe to say to Aaron. Right? It can mean that. Then there's a different time after Aaron's sons die, it says Hashem spoke to Aaron alone.
That's true.
So, you know, it could be that there are places. Again, you have to see how the Mefarshim explain all that. Well, we know the Midrashim say he was a Navi. That was the whole thing. Moshe didn't want to take the job, didn't want to become the leader of the Jewish people because Aaron was that person beforehand.
Right.
And it's mentioned that he was a prophet.
Well, then the explanation that he was mentioned because she's a prophet is so that we think that he is.
Not that we think that he is, but rather we can associate her with him, the prophetess, because he's also a prophet.
Right.
I mean, it makes a lot of sense to go ahead and when we want it, it makes a lot of sense to associate that it'll be a expression of honor to Aaron by associating his sister as a prophetess with him, because that alludes to the idea that he was also a prophet. I don't know if this is the source to say that he's a prophet, but okay. Then another thing the Ramban says is that we do find in other places in Tanakh where a person is identified with the older brother.
Right,
there are certain places that we find, and he quotes another place, yeah, that sometimes you find people identified with the Bible, but they're identified with their older brother, though she was older than him.
Right, but in this particular case, though, the most famous
brother. Yeah, but that's not that. But that wouldn't be relevant. It would seem that again, in for whatever reason why here we need to identify her, there is this identifying that's done. Actually, it's the first. This is really the first time that her name Miriam is mentioned. Does it say Miriam in Shemos when she was?
I believe so.
Yeah, I don't know. We have the Mialdos. Miss Levy. No. Nope.
Just a sister?
Sister.
Really? Oh, I see. That is interesting. I guess in older explanation they call it. They say
she was I'm saying, but his sister, but it doesn't. It never mentions her name. I think it's the first time it mentions her name. So if you're going to identify, so now again, it would make sense to identify by Moshe also, says the Ramban in the second explanation. When you want to identify someone by when you want to identify someone through the brother, the practice is the derech. The practice is through the older brother.
Yeah, I thought that when he started giving several sources, I thought one of them will say, well, it's sort of foreshadowing the fact that she had an issue with him later on.
Nobody says that. Okay. Actually, Rashi's other pshat why he says Achais Aaron is because of the fact that it says that Aaron put himself out for her when she did get punished.
Oh, okay, so that's a good question. The positive spin.
Okay. Now, okay, that is the Ramban's explanation why he says Achais Aaron. Right. Rav Hirsch says like this. And this is a very interesting explanation. Doesn't exactly see where he gets it from. But he says like this, on the words Aaron's sister. Amongst the women, she occupied the position that Aaron held amongst the men. You know why she's called the sister of Aaron? Because she's a sister. She's doing the same thing as Aaron. As Aaron spread amongst the men the word that was revealed to Moshe, so did Miriam amongst the women. He doesn't say where he gets that from.
That's nice.
But there's an interest, but this point could this could work with the commentary by the Rashbam. The Rashbam and the word Neviah, which we say means prophetess. The Ramban says, Koire bal divrei shevach etoichaches b'nei adam. If you are a person who gives out praise, or you rebuke people, you're called a Navi.
Oh.
You're a speaker. You're like a preacher. Don't forget, the word Navi really comes from the word to express.
So it seems
like the Rashbam is learning that, again, you know, he's not working necessarily with the Gemaras and everything like that, but he takes the word Neviah here and say Neviah. She is the Neviah. What was she Neviah? She was a speaker. He says, whoever, Kare Baal Divrei Shevach Eteches B'nei Adam, a person who calls a person, we're calling a person who is, who gives praise or gives rebuke to people, a Navi, speaker, preacher. So Miriam HaNaviya Achais Aaron means Miriam, the preacher.
But why did she preach to? He's not trying to prove that she is not a prophetess, which she is, we know from the past.
Yeah, but you know, the Rashbam works, with the Pshat.
Oh, he just wants to explain.
He wants to offer an interpretation of an interpretation that doesn't work with Gemara Medrash. He wants to work with a pshat that, you know, you look at this, what can we say it means? Saying it means, Neviah means, because in the Pesukim you never find that she's a prophetess. The answer is, she's a Neviah. She's the person who speaks.
It would have been nice if he had at least one more example where somebody who spoke was called a Novi. But apparently he doesn't.
But I'm also letting you know the root of the word Navi is to speak.
Yeah,
that's the root of the word.
Yeah,
and if you follow, and now, so Rav Hirsch's point will work out very well with this.
Right.
We're good with that. I mean, again, he doesn't say the words exactly like Rav Hirsch says. But at least the second part where he says a person who gives rebuke to people is called a Navi, right? Which is what regular Naviim did also, regular prophets did also. In the context of Miriam, she was the person who taught the women. And that's why she was the one who led the women in song. Okay. Now, you know, once we mention this, what I mentioned to you, a very interesting Chassam Sefer. We'll get back to we'll see if we have more things. We have more time to say more things on this. But Chassam Sefer says something really interesting. So the Pasuk says that Miriam, the prophetess, the sister of Aaron, took the drum in her hand, and all the men followed after her. Right? It says Chassam Sefer. Hinei ba'hanashim k'siv v'yaminu ba'ashem uv'moshe avdo. We just read that before. By the men, it says, they believed in Hashem and in Moshe his servant. The men's focus was Hashem and Moshe his servant. Believing in Hashem and Moshe, says the Chassam Sefer, means that they believed that only Moshe can be the conduit for Hashem's miracles. Right? Alkein Amru, therefore, later on they said, he said, Moshe ish lo yadana mehayalai. But they thought Moshe died. They were lost. Alkein Bikshu Tzura Shatishka Delav Kavad Hashem Krishka Zaraban. So now, they think it's only Moshe who can bring about miracles, who can lead them in a miraculous way. Moshe's gone. Moshe's gone. We need something else. And therefore, they ask for some kind of a form, some kind of an image, as the Ramban says. Not because of idol worship necessarily, but if they couldn't have Moshe, and they, in their minds, the only human being that could be that conduit of Hashem's miracles is Moshe, so it can't be Moshe, it's going to go ahead and it has to be something else, some kind of an image. Okay? Ach Hanashim, but the women who we knew did not sin by the golden calf, Heminu gam b'Miriam anavia. They believed in Miriam, that prophetess. Abishloi azasa neflois v'loi shem davar. She knew there were any miracles, but she was a prophetess. Alkein be'egel and istratzu hanashim. Therefore, the women never agreed to the golden calf. Ki amru im ein Moshe yesh levi amacherim. There's no Moshe. There's other people. He's doing here. By the men, it's by Aminu b'Hashem of Moshe. Right? Their belief is Hashem and Moshe. By the men, the two things have to go together. Because the men were all about Moshe. Does it mean they disrespected Miriam? No, she's not a prophet. Chas v'shalom. But she's not their person. Right? Their person, their Navi, the person that they put their trust in and they followed, that was Moshe. So by them, it was Hashem and Moshe. If there's no Moshe, then Hashem is not going to do. Is not going to do for them.
We're in trouble.
On the other hand, the women who were focused on Miriam and understood and appreciated a prophet who doesn't necessarily do wonders, by them it's like, okay. So if there's no Moshe, there's somebody else, and therefore they wouldn't agree to the Chayta Ego. So then the Ramban concludes really interesting. Now we know that when the men decided to build the golden calf, who did they approach first to get it done, according to the Midrash?
Aaron.
Nope. Aaron was not the first one they approached. When Moshe went up on Har Sinai, he left Aaron and Hur. Mm-hmm. Hur was their nephew. Hur was the son of Miriam. So they approached Hur first. Hur said, no way. Mm-hmm. And what did they do to him? They killed him. When Aaron saw that they killed Hur, he figured he has to do something. Now, okay, says Chassam Sefer, you know why they went to Hur first? Because Hur is Miriam's son. If they get Hur on their side, then that if they can get Miriam's son on their side, then they figured they'll get the women on their side. Hur didn't listen. Hur didn't fall for it.
So this is a Midrash story about Hur, right? It's not.
Yeah, Midrash. Yeah, it's not in the Chumash.
Right.
Not in the Chumash. Okay, so that's just a very interesting approach. Chassam Sefer is so novel, and it's a very novel thing how he says, well, he wants to give this explanation of what happened by the golden calf. Why the men, not the women? Why Hur?
It's really beautiful.
Very interesting, fascinating approach. Okay. Okay. Let's now have a thought on the other part of this parsha, which is the story of the man. Okay, let's turn to page 386. And Pasuk Yutes, verse 19. This is Perek Tazayin, chapter 16, Pasuk Yutes, verse 19. Okay, the man has fallen. The Jewish people didn't have any food. The man fell. Vayir Moshe Aleha, Moshe said to them, Ish al yoser mimenu ad boiker. No person should leave this over until the morning. You don't leave over man. You collect what you collect, you eat it, and you don't leave over. Okay, and we also know that basically you collect for that day, right? You collected an omer. That was the amount you collected. You try collecting more. You didn't land up with more. You only landed up with the omer. And Moshe says, no leaving over for the next day. Next pasuk, v'loyishamu al Moshe, and they didn't listen to Moshe. There are people who didn't listen to Moshe. Rashi says it was Dasan and Aviram. V'yosiru anashim imenu ad boiker. There were men who left over from the mun until the morning. What happened to it? V'yarum v'yarum toilaim v'yivash. It became wormy, and it spoiled, stank. V'yiktsav aleihem Moshe. Moshe got angry at them. So why do you get angry? They didn't listen. Every time you don't listen, you get angry. So the Sephornu says...
Well, it has to do with trust. That there will be one tomorrow.
Yeah.
And so they showed that they didn't have the...
So he got angry because they didn't show their trust, not because it got rotten.
Yeah, because they didn't show their trust.
So now, so the Sephornu says, Moshe got angry because it's not that they left it over because I can't eat anymore. They left it over to test. Moshe says, don't leave over. And they left it over. Why did they leave it over for? Why? Because they weren't hungry that day? No, because they tried to test and see. Moshe says, don't leave it over. And what if you do? What if you do? That's like you said. The idea was they were doing it not because they happened to leave over. They were doing it to test and see what happens. They challenged. They, you know, Moshe says, don't leave it. I'm going to leave it. It's going to happen. And the answer is, this is what happened. So Moshe got angry because, like you said, they were testing. They were testing. The Meshech Chachma has a very interesting explanation here as to what got Moshe angry. Meaning, what's the assumption is that Moshe's getting angry. It's more than just not listening. There's something more going on. So the Meshech Chachma says like this: it is very clear, and although it's kind of, you know, many commentaries say this, and to be honest, sometimes I'm kind of bothered by it. But you know, it's very, you know, Moshe said no leaving over for the next day. A lot of mun fell, right? But people collected what they needed for the mun, what fell. And what happened to the mun that was not collected, that fell? What happened to it? The pasuk says, melted. Melted, right? So basically, the Jewish people got food for one day, and that's it. That's it. And in essence, that was a very big test. That every single day, right, they can only collect what they need for that day and not know what's happening tomorrow, was a big test. Now, I don't know, if I was in the desert and Hashem told, and I saw mun fall, and I saw mun fall the next day, you know, I'm not sure how big my test would last for. I mean, on the first day, maybe it's a test. And this does sound like the first day.
You get used to it, I see.
Maybe, I think that's a question. But it's clearly the Mepharshim don't say that. Other Mepharshim say this was really a challenge that every single day, right, they had to put their trust in Ben Shalom was going to do it. Now, you'd think that they should have enough trust for that. Again, and maybe he just means on this day, which was like this happened right away. But again, what was supposed to be was that the Jewish people were to be given a test where, you know, it's happening today, right? We don't know if it's going to happen tomorrow. Nothing's left. You can't leave over, so there's nothing left for tomorrow. So it's a big test in their trust in Hashem. But now, what did Dasan Aviram do? They left over for the next day. And what happened? It rotted. So that means we really can't leave over for the next day. Even if we try to leave over, we couldn't leave over. It's going to rot. My understanding of Meshech Chachma is that lessened the challenge. I mean, the challenge of the Jewish people was, right, you know, so, you know, what's going to be tomorrow? So if you only have so much food, you know it's going to be tomorrow, what do? You eat less today and save it tomorrow. Right? Jewish people said you can't, and Moshe said to the Jewish people you can't do that. Right? So that's a big test, right? If I could take a leave for tomorrow, and I don't, because I'm not supposed to, and I have to trust Hashem is going to give me tomorrow, that's a test. But if it comes out that I can't, even if I wanted to leave for tomorrow, I couldn't, because it's going to rot.
But it's already the second day. They already failed the test. I mean, not the test.
Fine, so the next day. The next day.
But this is when he became angry. It doesn't matter. This.
But he became angry because now the test, the challenge of the Jewish people that was supposed to continue is lessened.
Oh, I see.
If it would be that every day they could have left over. And Hashem says, no, you can't leave over. That increases the challenge. That increases the test. But now that they see, you know, even if we try to leave it over, it's going to rot.
Right.
We don't really have much of a choice. So that decreases the challenge.
Yeah. Okay.
That's what got Moshe angry. What got Moshe angry was that now the way they're supposed to show their trust in Hashem wasn't happening. Wasn't going to happen anymore. But then the Meshech Chachma doesn't stop there. Meshech Chachma points out, again, the way he says, Moshe got angry, but Hashem didn't get angry. Now, I think what he means by that is that, right, here it just says Moshe got angry. No reaction from Hashem. When Moshe tells the Jewish people, don't go out on Shabbos, because you're going to get a double portion of man on Friday, and people still go out on Shabbos, then Hashem goes ahead and says to Moshe, you know, how long are you going to refuse to listen to me? How long are the Jewish people going to refuse to listen to me? Why didn't Hashem get upset the first time? Okay. So the Meshech Chachma says, Hashem didn't get angry, because by the Rebbeinu Shalom, Rebbeinu Shalom was kind of, he was okay with this. Because now that Dasan Avirim left over the man, and it got rotten the next day. So what happens on Friday? Hashem says, Friday, you get a double portion. Because no man on Shabbos. What? But they're collecting the double the portion on Friday. It's got to last till the next day. Typically, the man rots the next day. But now because of Shabbos, it doesn't rot. So now the miracle of Shabbos came out because of this. If Dasan Avirim never would have done that, right? They were just told, you couldn't leave for the next day. And Hashem says, no, you can't leave for the next day. Now Hashem says, okay, Friday, no man, you get a double portion. Okay, you get a double portion. Now I don't have to finish everything. Now I have a double portion. I'm going to leave over for the next day. Fine. Now the Jewish people appreciate the miracle of Shabbos because the nature of the man is to rot the next day, but on Shabbos, but the double portion Friday for Shabbos didn't rot. So Moshe's reaction was, you know, he has his reaction because there's a certain honor to Hashem that could have been displayed here, and it got messed up. And Hashem said, but from Hashem's point of the Meshech Chachma, this brings out the greatness of Shabbos. So he doesn't react. Very interesting. So the Meshech Chachma then says like this. You know, on Shabbos, we have Lecha Mishnah, two breads, to commemorate that we got another portion of man for Shabbos. Okay? Says Meshech Chachma, and this I think is a famous question. So what happened in the desert over 40 years if Yonta fell out the day after Shabbos? Yonta fell out after Shabbos. How much man fell the Friday before?
Do we even know that they celebrated Yonta?
Sure. They did. I don't think there's much of a question with that. Okay? So now, you have it, right? So now what happened then? Did the man fall on Yontif? The assumption is they didn't fall on Yontif. So how much bread how many portions they get on Friday then? It's got to be three. So the question is, why don't we have three loaves of bread when Yonta falls out after Shabbos? If we're supposed to be commemorating the extra portions of man, that's when we have two breads on Shabbos. If Yonta falls out after Shabbos, we should do three. Says Meshech Chachma, that the answer is that we're not, when we remember, when we're commemorating Lechemish, or double bread, a double portion, we're not just commemorating a double portion that fell. We're commemorating a double portion that fell and lasted. Because man is not supposed to last till the next day. But for Shabbos, it did. So when we do Lechemish on Shabbos is commemorating the double portion that fell and lasted.
But it lasted for 3 days.
Wait a second.
Okay.
Right? Wait a second. So the first step is that we have a double portion on Shabbos because we're commemorating the miracle of the double bread, of the Lecha Mishnah, and the fact that on Shabbos it lasted, right? The fact that I could actually have Lecha Mishnah, right?
Yeah.
Right? That's why I have two breads. Now, when the case was that three fell, right? So is the fact that on Yontif it didn't rot, is that anything unique?
Longer.
But it just lasted longer because it needed to last longer. Or it didn't even last longer, right? Your portion for Shabbos lasts and your portion for Yontif lasts. So there's nothing unique about the Yontif.
Okay.
It's because if you learn it's just about the portions, okay, so Yontif should have a third portion. Says the Meshech Chachma, it's not just about the portions that fell, it's about the portions that lasted. It's about the miracle of the fact that they had Lecha Mishnah, because there was a miracle in the Lecha Mishnah, because the nature of mud was to rot the next day, and on Shabbos it didn't. That is what that's a main part of what we're remembering in Lecha Mishnah. And Yom Tov falls out on Shabbos. There's nothing unique about that in that regard. Therefore, it's only Lecha Mishnah.